started doing demos, I was so guilty of the wandering cursor syndrome. Of like, I would have my hand perpetually on my mouse, and my cursor would just go a little wander around the screen while I was talking. It's over here and over here. Which, if you don't know what that looks like, just record yourself. And I'm like,
Trying to do
what?
anything.
Trying to do anything. Or next time you're watching somebody else give a presentation, watch if you can see their cursor, because it is the most distracting thing.
I recently was, well, maybe, which maybe I shouldn't be doing, but I love perching on my partner's shoulder and seeing what he's up to at work. And recently they had a demo being like showcased to them. It was a it, in that journey, like they were already bought in. Now it was just about someone showing them some of the bits and pieces, which is pre-sales, but it was a pre-sales person doing it, right? And it's but the fidgety mouse, the fidgety cursor across the screen, like I had to look away. So I'm like, all I wanted to do is like from the screen just scream at the guys like, stop moving your freaking mouse. Like you. And by the way, if anyone is struggling with that, I highly, highly, highly suggest a touchpad. That was the breaking for me because, like, I have the same problem as you, right? If I was holding on, because it's especially when you're early on and you're still sort of worried about this sort of stuff. If there is a mouse that I can hold on to, I will not let go out of fear. This is my lifeline. But when you have a touchpad, it actually allows you to more naturally move your. Because when you're a mouse, with the mouse, you don't move your hand very often, do you? You just let it lie there.
No.
But with the touchpad, you move your hand a lot more often than not. So that's why I switched to a touchpad when I
That's
was there.
interesting.
I had a mouse next to me for my usual working, and when I was demoing, I used a touchpad exclusive.
The other
Because
thing
it's
that
very
I've
rare that my finger just gonna sit there and just shake
Yeah, just sort
like
of
throughout
shaking
the
it.
demonstration.
The other thing that I do, I mean, I talk with my hands a lot, and I do so more obviously when I'm face to face, but I do it when I'm remote as well. And it's a way that I, if you're someone who expresses in that way, do that. Like, take your hands off of what you're doing. And also, if you're answering a question, turn your screen share off. Like, Pete, I think there's this paranoia about you're sharing your screen, and it's the worst thing. And again, everything I am kind of calling out here, I am guilty of doing it for far, far, far too long, and only kind of far too late going, hey, look, actually, if I do this, and everyone's like, yeah, that's kind of, you know, oh, well, yeah, that's obvious, but it doesn't feel obvious until you do it. Is if you're sharing your screen, you should be sharing your screen for a reason. You should be sharing information. And if you have shared that information and you're now answering a question that relates to something else entirely, turn off the screen share. And I did actually have a comment made to me. We were doing some, would have been 6 months ago now, actually, doing sort of internal demos of different products where we've come together through M&A, different, there were still different kind of product lines. And we were doing just some like standard, like what's your sort of standard demo, right? Not, and you can argue the case, but there is always a standard thing. The kind of thing that you do when you are going into a disco demo and you go, this is just a product. This is how I'm showing you kind of what it does. And one of the comments that was made to me by actually one of my peers was, I found it really profound that when you were answering a question, you stop sharing your screen.
I did that by accident without really thinking about it when I was an individual contributor. Now obviously I've dug into it a little bit more, and yes, absolutely. And by the way, just to reaffirm that, you should only be sharing your screen as part of like, you know, I'm gonna show you this specific thing, Mr. Customer. I am showing it to you now, and then I'm done showing. Right? It shouldn't just be hovering and there should be text on the screen, because guess what? People are reading the UI versus listening to you, and that's not what you want. So what I've sort of done as an individual contributor was exactly this. Like, somebody interrupts, asks a question that is a little bit deeper or is a little bit, again, it's not something that I can quickly show in the UI or something like that. It was more of a, so how do we do this, right? How walk us through the path of like, how do we get this in? Or we, you know, we have this integration. How do we actually work with this integration? That to me was prime spot of like, checking in with everyone. Is everyone interested? And, you know, is this something that's really important to you guys right now? Yes? No? Okay, cool. Close everything down.
Mm-hmm.
Just me and the screen. Just check it. Like, yeah. Hands in the air, right? Painting a picture.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's actually where, like, the whole digital whiteboarding thing came in. That's where I was really sort of realized, like, this is the power that I need to actually quickly explain things to people, sort of interrupting in, like, throughout the conversation. A lot of the things that I teach people nowadays is about, like, how do you structure those conversations? But let's be real. That doesn't, you know, things don't always go to plan. Let me be very clear. Like, things almost never go to plan. And this is one of those things as well, right? Where you can't, and you should stop and show yourself talking to people when you're answering a question versus your UI, your demoing actually being opened. It's fine. People will never say this because it sounds strange. Like, I want to look at you as you're responding. But again, that's what we do, right? If you're talking to someone face to face, they won't look at the whiteboard as you're, or whatever you're presenting. They will look at you, right, as you are talking, because that's what we do. We look at people because, like, there's something in the face, there's something in the way we form words, there's something in the way we move our hands. So people want to see that, to actually make that connection.
Yeah. Don't sacrifice the real estate that you've got on your screen too readily, because especially if you're on Zoom or on Teams, if you're just that little box in, like, the top corner, as you say, people are looking at all the things on your screen, on the UI, on the slide. They're distracted. They're not fully engaged. And even if they're not reading it, they're just kind of a bit of drip checked out and going, oh, right, okay, it's answering a question now. They don't feel like they're being prioritized. And if you think about it, when you're being presented to, if you ask a question and someone just leaves up a slide and you're like, okay, but you just asked my question, but you almost like you feel sort of brushed off. You don't feel like they've brought you into the conversation. And when I, even doing it face to face, particularly if you're doing PowerPoint slides, and this is something that I remember learning in high school, and I did it then and I still do it now, is if you just press B on a keyboard when you're present mode, I think this probably works in Keynote as well, or there'd be a similar shortcut. B, it just turns your screen blank.
Right.
In PowerPoint. So if you're presenting, even if you're face-to-face and you have a PowerPoint slide, find a way to turn off the screen, lock the screen with a shortcut. Like I say, PowerPoint is easy when you tap the B key and you tap it again and it'll bring it back up. But if someone is asking a question, you want the attention to be 100% on you and not on anything that's on your screen, because even though you can more easily get people's attention when it's in the room, you're still kind of in that potential position of people not really engaging. It's also why whenever I do a presentation, I would say ones at work are a bit different because you're trying to impart a lot of information. But if I'm like doing it, certainly when I've done any presentation when I was a student, if I'm presenting information in like a training session, I will use very few words, if any, on a slide. I'm much more often, I know you do a very similar thing, you just use an image. Because then you say, here is the thing, and you're talking about a point, and people look at it, they go, oh, okay, that's good. And then they turn back to look at you. Because they don't need to be overloaded with content. And the more words you put up on the screen, the more people are going
to
read.
I have a controversial thing to say, which is, a little bit of a jab at you about, like, you know, oh, if it's a work slide, like, there's a lot more stuff on it. If there is a lot more stuff on your slide than the recommended sort of, like, couple of words, send an email. Make it into a PDF and send it as an email, right? And mind you, like, again, I made these mistakes as well. But then over time, I realized that if I want to share, because you do need to do it sometimes, right? You just need to share text with people. Doesn't have to be slides.
Yeah, right. And I guess what I mean is that if you were to look at a slide that I did for my DemoFest presentation versus one that I would do internally, you go, wow, there's a lot more words on the internal one. It's still far fewer than some slides that I see.
Yeah, there is a recommended, but it's the walls of text, right? Because again, sometimes you need it, right? Like, in my VMware days, like, it was about, like, you know, speeds and feeds. Right? Like, what is the required, like, MTU for this to work? Like, what is this? That's facts. You don't need me voicing them out for you to have them. What I usually tended to do is, so I took practically all of the slides and all of this information that I had from like different product tours. Mm. I took all of them in. I made a big PDF with all of the reference facts and figures. And just if people ask me something, I would open the PDF file. I will say to them, like, I'll share this with you. Let me show you on which page it is, but also where the other bits are. So I presented the file very quickly to them and go like, so don't worry about the facts and figures. I'll ship this over to you. Let's talk about more interesting things and more, you know, important things like how is this actually going to fit in your general setup. So people don't hook it. Because at the same time, you can't just tell people like, you know, oh, these are details like we're going to talk about later, because they're never going to forget about them. Because they're going to keep on looping in their head about like, ooh, but she never answered me about that thing. She doesn't, it's like, I need to ask. Or they'll just disengage completely, which is even worse.
Yeah, of course. And I think again, and I do know what you're saying, but I would also just push back gently and just say it's very, I know you wouldn't disagree, it's so context dependent that you cannot apply, you can't, it's really difficult. There are hard rules, which is don't put blocks of text on slides.
Yeah.
Or there's, I mean, the only time you might see that is perhaps if you're preparing information for like a board level meeting and you have, they literally say, we want to see one slide and we want you to take us through line by line the information. Because I have seen that. And in that way, in that situation, it's not being used as a presentation. It's being used as like a report that you're sharing.
Yes.
What we're talking about is when you're presenting to a group of people and you want them to take away a message, don't just throw loads of words at them. And my favourite story that every time I have this conversation with anybody, and this is a true story, is when I was a student, I was in my third year of university or college, and we had to do these group presentations. First group to go up, it's a very nerve-wracking thing. And I should also caveat this by saying, I know that for some people with neurodiversity issues, certainly around people who are dyslexic, having, you know, black on white is not at all readable. However, I don't know if having a royal blue background with red writing in Times New Roman font is ever something that someone has said this works. Maybe it does, but this was what it was, and this was years ago, right? And then when you have four people who have a slide that is prepared in this way with no images, not just bullet text, stand there and then hold the printed out slides and read the slides to you.
Oh, that's painful.
Just have never cringed like that again. Because I always go, this is the worst presentation I ever saw. And I still remember it. 13 years on, I think. I want to say 13 years. Maybe even slightly longer, just because it stuck so vividly in my mind. And the hardest part was, I don't think the people presenting knew what they were doing was wrong. And I don't think it was intentional. I think it was...
Well, no, of course not intentional.
It was nervousness. It was a lack of familiarity with the medium.
Yeah.
But it is... why I am now such an advocate for, certainly with pre-sales teams and with my team, this is something I did with my team right at the start of the year, was we didn't talk about the like technology or anything else. We talked about soft skills. We talked about, you know, we touched on it last time. We talked about these general things because I just think they get overlooked so often. We focus so much on the like, this is how you get that extra edge in this piece. But actually, there's just some fundamentals that we always forget. And it's so important to go over them.
Ooh, I'm getting shivers from thinking about that presentation.
I know, yeah. I've placed a nightmarish vision in your mind. Something I put up the other day about stopping talking. And it was like, everyone's just like, yes, this is what you do. And I was like, yeah, but we don't say it enough because I still see so many people that just don't shut up. Shut up.
I have 45 minutes. I'm going to talk my due.
I must get through my entire script. And it's like, no, you don't need to get through your script.
But again, that's a confidence thing, right? Like I did that at the beginning as well, and then it took me almost a year to get comfortable with just, oh man, it took me 2.5 years to say, I'm gonna cut this conversation short now.
Yeah,
like
I
felt like I had a like, you know, ooh, I'm a big boy now. Like I can say these things and not get like I and not get into trouble for it, because like, yeah, like the customer I was talking to at the time, it was just not working. Like the conversation was not working, the level of attention was not working. It was just, it was plainly disrespectful. Right? It's like, and I'm like, I have better things to do in my day other than like dealing, like trying to beg you to buy this product. Like I don't need you.
Right? Sure. Yeah.
I think especially there was I think it's any product, but I think especially for a big enterprise company, and this was not widely accepted, but I thought it, and because I had this conversation later on with my boss afterwards, after the situation, and I'm like, we should have respect for ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. We're not trying to like beg people to buy our stuff off the side of the road, right? Like we are a technological enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
We don't beg people to buy our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So why would I stoop so low as to like accept incredibly disrespectful behavior towards me for the sake of a potential purchase? It's like, and they wouldn't buy anyway, right? So
I agree, and there is a real problem of just going, oh, whatever you want, and you think that doesn't build respect.
It's the customer is always right approach, right?
Yeah,
that's
refusing to challenge them.
Yeah,
always go, yes. It's like, well, no, because actually, what you're doing there is you're pursuing the path of least resistance, but it's not necessarily the right thing to do. But
I don't think so. Have I told you my horror story, like my worst customer engagement story?
No.
It was a video call, like again a Zoom call. So I was in the London office, right? So I was actually in the office that day, and I get called in by another specialist SC to join a customer call, and I joined this call. It was already like there were already 18 people on it, and I'm like, ooh, not a good start. Very, very big audience. Not what I signed up for, but that's, you know, fair enough. I can deal with this. So just, and no cameras on, nothing. Just a whole bunch of black squares. And I'm like, okay, this is not gonna... We're not starting off really well here, are we? But I went in, my usual bubbly self, like, hi, everyone, hope everyone's doing all right. Like, you know, this person invited me over to, like, have a conversation with you guys about this specific product, yada, yada, yada. Would it be possible? Obviously, I'm aware of the person's circumstances. Sometimes, you know, it's not possible for us. But would it be okay if folks are able to turn on at least some of their... Like, you know, at least some folks turn on the cameras? Nothing. Not even like voice, right? Just silence. I'm like, and I gave it, mind you, I counted. Because like in these situations, to keep silent, to give people a chance to do something, I needed to count in my head. Like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, right? Nothing. I'm like, okay. Then let's do voice only. Like, would it be possible? I acknowledge we're a big group. So let's do, so, and obviously we won't have the time to introduce everyone, but I'm very keen on understanding who I'm talking to. So can we do for, you know, folks just to put their names and their role in the chat, and then for either the, you know, so someone to be dedicated and delegated as the speaking head, so just so I can actually have a chat with someone. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Oh, no.
To which I'm like, I'm sorry, is there anyone out there? So suddenly this like male booming voice comes in. We're here. We want to see a demo. I'm like, oh, hello. Oh. Right? I was so happy to hear a voice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fantastic. Can I talk to you? Can I ask you some questions? And he's like, well, we just want to see the demo. And I'm like, well, for a demo to show up, I need to know what you want to see.
Yeah.
So that's why we're having a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like...
Mm-hmm.
And this was, like, these are 5 grueling minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Of me just asking a question and sitting there being pretty, right? Yeah, yeah. And just, like, smiling and just waiting for someone to say something. But in my head, I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
And then goodness, like, the other SE, like, pops in. And she starts saying, like, you know, oh, we had this conversation with them. It's like, you know, she, bless her, she tried to fill in the void. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. Right. So at least was some sort of interaction. I'm like, thank you so much. But I'm really keen, obviously, like, all everything, because she was a different specialist. So these were all questions that matter for her part, not for mine. So I'm like, okay. So for me, the minimum I need to get from you guys to be able to show you a good demo, other than just, you know, showing you the UI, which I can just do by sending you a link and you can have a look at the UI, or it's not hidden anywhere. But if you want an actual demo with someone talking you through it, I need to know the sort of like couple of questions that I have. I started name calling.
Oh.
Right? It's just like, oh, I can see. So, you know, made up name. Oh, John spoke earlier. John, can you, you know, do you have, I don't have that information. Okay. And this was like, and at this point it's 10 minutes. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, guys, let me make something very clear. I am not going to do a little sing and dance routine for you folks until I understand what you guys need. So to me, it feels like you guys haven't actually had the chance to have a conversation internally around what are the requirements for this. Mm. Is that correct? Echoing silence. <Yeah. laughs> And I'm like, okay, if I don't get anything back, I am just going to drop off this call now. And suddenly, like, again, the same person, by the way, he pops in and goes, like, I think you're right. I think we need to have a conversation internally about this. And I'm like, thank you. I really hope everyone has a fantastic rest of their day. And I just dropped the call. My boss was sitting two rows behind me and heard the whole thing. And he came over and just went like, I'm very proud of what you did. I'm very happy. You need to teach people how to do this. But I was fuming. Mm, I was angry because I'm like, unreasonably so, right? It wasn't a reasonable anger. Like, I shouldn't be angry. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they don't owe me anything.
No, but like, but I think you have that feeling of like, but I shown up and they've asked for this and now they won't tell me what they want. And it's a very valid feeling. And the only thing that I can think of, and I have had those experiences. I know I have. I probably just blanked them out of my mind. I think you hit the nail on the head there with the, like, when it's the camera's off and it's just this, like, group of circles that you're speaking to if you're on Teams. And you're like, oh, this is weird. When I've had it, one that does stick in my mind was actually it was a negotiation. It was right near the end of the deal. And we were going over some kind of bits. And it was the classic scenario of we built a really good rapport with the key stakeholders. And this person has now been brought in to do a very specific part of it. And it's like, we get it. We understand what your kind of outcome is. The way they went about it was just really aggressive. But in like a kind of quite passive aggressive way initially. And very like stayed off camera. Everyone else, again, this is where everybody else was on camera. One person was not on camera. And that kind of, and it's like, they're just going through stuff and we're going, oh, so we're talking about this. Yes. Oh, and so you've asked here, can we do this? We can't do that. Can you give us a bit more information about that request? Why? And eventually, after about 10 minutes, it came on camera and just, I kind of realised, oh no, this is just how this person is. This isn't like personal to me. This is just how they engage, which is over text is quite kind of forced, and in kind of communication is just very like give nothing away type.
Yeah.
But it's like, you just got to give me something because I'm just trying to engage with you. On a quite, not on a, I'm not, it's that thing of, I don't want to take you for a pint. I just want to have this call be successful. And I actually got to a point in that, I think about halfway through, where I just said, hey, Jeremy, let's call him Jeremy. I don't know where that name came to. I was like, let's think of a name that's not John, Jeremy. And this was not completely.
His brother.
Yeah, exactly. Zaphod Beeblebrox, there we go, that's a name. So I got to this point halfway through the call, and I just said, we all want to have a successful outcome here, I just need you to engage with me a bit. It's something along those lines. Really just kind of doing a bit of a, I'm not trying to be confrontational. It was really funny because we came off and my colleagues on the call like rang me and went, you were really not happy. I went, no, because there was no, I was just trying so hard to engage in a, maybe a nice way. And I just I just needed to be given just a little bit back. In the end, we got through it. But yeah, there's no easy way to deal with those situations. You just have to call it out for what it is sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But no, after my sort of that being the worst, thereafter, everything else was a breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my head, it's like, if I've gone through that nightmare of a situation, I have nothing.
Yeah.
Even what you were describing with someone who is just difficult to engage with, that's fine.
Yeah.
Right. There's always ways. There's always methods. When it's a complete and utter silence, that was genuinely testing my nerves, because I'm like, I can easily, the easiest way to get out of that was just to, would have been just to do a 15 minute demo and just say thanks everyone, and just because it's already at the time I was really into this what is the value that we as pre-sales provide, and mm-hmm. I'm like, I will not become a demo monkey. I refuse. So that was really the first, ever since I got into that mentality, was the first time really that I was so drastically challenged. Because until then, again, 99% of folks are absolutely lovely and understand why we're there. They understand the value of you. They want to engage. They want to care. And especially from the VMware product portfolio was adored, right? So it was easy for me to have these conversations. But it was those case scenarios, edge cases that was just that really, that makes my faith wobble in what I'm doing.
Yeah. I get it. And I think it's those situations which they both define kind of who you are as, a professional in this world, but also it's just one call, right? And you have one call and you go, that's fine, that went badly, then you move on.
Yeah, no, it's not a make or break.
No.
You want to talk to me about my favorite topic?
Let's talk about email. Well, I should say I did kind of, I'm still learning the lesson of don't have too much conversation before we hit record, but I dropped the truth bomb with Dalia that Gmail is 20 years old this week, which made both of us
happy birthday to
Gmail. Hey, look, I still have a Gmail, and it's funny because there was a piece on The Verge which go really interesting and kind of go through the history of it and has some proper old school Gmail screenshots, and I went, oh yeah, Gmail's a bit different to how it was. But email, right? It's the thing that everyone loves to hate but can't seem to live without.
I hate it. I hate it with a passion of 1,000 suns.
Okay.
Because it is literally anyone and everyone on this planet has direct access to my eyeballs. And that is beyond frustrating, because hey, you know what, I can block people on social media, right? On LinkedIn, not everyone can just talk to me, right? You need to go through some sort of vetting process. Email, nothing, absolutely nothing. But again, which is both the, oh man. do you feel it? Do you feel the ranting coming?
I can feel it coming.
Brace yourselves. No, I'll try to be civil about this, because Let me try to have a more mild reaction. There is a benefit to email as it is right now, which is that, again, there is a benefit to people, for people being able to reach out to you, to have that clear communication channel, for people to be able to newsletters, cold calling, which there is a benefit to a lot of this stuff, right? Cold emailing. Is this something that I can give to anyone in a conference and they can easily reach out to me in one way or another, even though I tend to give them LinkedIn, but that's a completely different thing. My biggest problem with email is that it's in the same inbox, in the same place. I can potentially get an email from HMRC about my taxes and an email about someone's, someone is trying to sell me, pop sockets for my phone, right? In that same inbox, I can have that. And that is, and yes, I know, tech savvy people are going to come at me going like, you know, oh, but there's filters, so you can filter things. Like, filters are not perfect. So you do miss stuff. So I do still need to go through like my generic inbox and actually have a look at that. And also, if you've never had a company, please try to like set up a company like email address and just see the amount of blatant crap you just get inundated with. Of like, oh, you, I see someone like obviously has sold your email to, so you email somewhere in the data broker's like, you know, repertoire, and I sold it to someone. I'm like, oh, I can see you're doing consultancy services, so look at our thing that they can help you do this thing better. It's like, you know, oh, or we can sell you like 1,000 emails that you can do the same thing that we're doing to you. It's like, no. So yeah, I that positive side pulls very short. Sorry. I'm trying. Sell me the positives of email, please.
So, I would say that email has like every innovation. Let's take two other innovations in communication. The telephone and the ability to send letters by post. The postal service, essentially having a nationwide postal service, which means that I can take, write a bit of paper, put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, put it in a box down the street, and it will arrive with you a day, 2 days, 3 days later. The phone, I can pick up a phone and I can call you, and that opens up a better way for us to communicate. It made it easier to do so, it made it cheaper to do so, and as it scaled, it was able to connect more people. Both of those have had the same issue that you just described with email, which is that the moment that your address, your phone number, and no matter how hard you try to keep that information out of the public domain, out of access, people get access to it. The amount of literal junk mail that I get, that is just stuff posted through my door, you'd think, hey, you know what, now it's all email. Oh, it really isn't. And email's just maybe marginally better targeted. A lot of the time it's not, but I don't get emails trying to sell me on retirement flats. I do get mass junk mail. But at the same time, I get stuff that is like addressed to me. I get stuff, but at the same time, like you're saying with email, I also get very important stuff through the post. I get important phone calls, but I never answer the phone because I never know if it's going to be someone trying to sell me something. And I think that the positive side, so sell the positive side of email, I will come to that. I think that the problem, as I say, is it's just being co-opted, as everything always is, to how do we make it possible to sell stuff through this. Same with social media. Right. And the one that has happened the fastest, I would say, recently, right, is TikTok, which in the space of 2 years, maybe three, like it had a moment during the pandemic 4 years ago when it was like everyone was, lots of people were on it. It was still a new form. There were no ads on it, right? The TikTok shop didn't exist. And people were kind of connecting across the internet with strangers, like through this new social application. Now, I mean, I've deleted it because it was just a time sink, but it would be one video, ad, a video, ad, a video, sponsored content, live stream of QVC, television sales, right? The kind of shopping channel sales. It's just become that, and it's actually back to something that we've spoken about previously, which is this idea of entertification, of like platforms just try to squeeze every little bit of money out of them that they can. They build a user base, they try and squeeze the money out. But that is symptomatic of the same thing that's happened with email, which is just, as you say, it just becomes as a way of people trying to sell stuff to you. And what that does is it creates a really problematic relationship with what is actually a very powerful technology. And we haven't even talked about how people use it at work yet.
No, which is a completely different thing. Let's then make it a little bit more, you know, me stop pulling my hair and actually talking to you, you know, as a human about this. I really struggled with email when I was working in a company with, because, and it was mostly expectation. Even try as I may with setting up a, I will, one of the first things I did when I joined VMware, because I knew this was going to be the cultural problem I'm going to be facing, is to set up that my response rate is going to be once every 24 hours. No earlier, nor later. If you need me, and I would write that out on my signature, right? It's, if you need me urgently, call me, right? I would still get complaints from people to my boss about, like, oh, they're not responding. So the long short of that is that I had to be more responsible for the sake of not losing my job. That has now drastically changed because you haven't received an email from me recently, but in my signature now that I send out to folks is I check my email twice a day. I check it in the morning and check it in the afternoon. Everything else, call me. If you want to talk to me, there's a link to book some time with me. If it's really urgent, I'm giving folks access to my phone, right?
So it's interesting that you do that, because I check my email twice a day, but I don't tell people that's what I do. And now, I think for you, it's, again, it depends on the relationship you have, but there was a, and we should acknowledge the book that I know you finished, I'm still reading it, called A World Without Email. We'll link it in the show notes. But there's a very interesting point made in that, which is the telling people, this is when I check my email, is from another book that I read a couple of years ago, The 4-Hour Work Week, very successful book, which again, kind of it's like panning for gold reading these things, because you go, there was a lot of dirt and crap that you have to sift through, but there's some real nuggets in there. And I think one of the nuggets in this book is the challenge is that thing of telling people when you check your email, because then they, and I've seen this happen, when other people have said, oh, I check my email, you know, these times a day. So I'll schedule my emails to them. If you say to me, I check my emails at 10 a.m, I will schedule my email to come to you at 9:59. Because I know that will be the top of your inbox.
Please do so, right?
But I don't want, but the problem with, but also that can become a problem, because then you just end up getting repeated people kind of pushing stuff to back to your inbox. It kind of, and some of it again depends on how you work. And I have worked very hard to pull myself away from using my email inbox as my to-do list, because I had it for a long time and I hated it. The kind of thing that it's funny because I've kind of done this, and the author of the book makes the same point, which is don't necessarily tell people, hey, I check my email twice a day. And again, this is something that has to be, this really more applies to working internally. But if you just don't check your email, and if people are not getting a fast enough response, they will find another way to reach out to you. And if you're available in another way, great, right? And but make sure you are available in that way.
I'll tell you why I tell people the timing, because if they do want to do what you just explained with, like, you know, oh, I'll schedule an email, that's fine, because I don't have any other internal tools to talk to people. So I don't have Slack, Teams, etc. to talk to the folks that I'm communicating over email. That is sometimes the only way they have. Or via LinkedIn, right? But LinkedIn I check even rarer, because then it's rarely that I'm going to look into, like, unless I'm expecting someone to message me over LinkedIn, I'm not looking. So that's why
caveating.
So that's why for me that was a very sort of like conscious decision of I want there to be a timing that people understand, and if there is something that they really want to talk to me about. But again, even then, you can book a slot to talk to me, right? You can set, like, I have my calendar opened for people to book, you know, 25-minute slots to have a chat with me if it is something that, you know, just requires us to, like, you know, let's sit down, let's have a conversation. But, yeah.
As you say, you have you give other people ways to connect with you. And that's the key thing. And it is also about having your, I think it's so much more about your own relationship with your email inbox. And I do want to talk about newsletters as well, because I think that there's been a really interesting cycle in how people use email, and how we've kind of, there was a whole time of it and then we've moved away from it. But that's we'll kind of come on to that. I think the thing with, again, coming back to, like, how you manage your personal inbox, and a lot of it is to do with how you manage your own sort of day to day. But again, it's I will kind of have, I have set rules for myself. It's like, if I go back and forth like three times on a thread, I'm going to call you up, or I'll ping you on like Teams or Slack or whatever I'm using. And I'll say, can we have a call? Because we're just going back and forth. Or I'll put some time on the calendar. And I think it's a difficult balance because having a call as a way to reduce the amount of email, but then you have the counter, which is, well, this call could have been an email. And that's a really, really hard balance to strike. And I think that's where you have to sort of just figure out in some ways what works for you. One thing that I do, I'm on holiday this week. I'm just around at home doing some jobs. I cleared my inbox before I finished last week. When I go back, I will move all of the emails in my inbox into a folder and I will mark it April time off, April 2024 time off. Nothing will get deleted. Everything will be there. Everything will be searchable. Everything will be accessible. If things are really that important, people will have either booked time on my calendar or they will email me again because they have had an auto response from me to say, I am out of office until this time. And it's something that I have evangelized both with peers and with my team. When people go, oh, I've got back, oh, I've spent 6 hours going through my emails. So I'm like, why? If there is valuable information in there, you'll be able to find it, or it has passed and it's gone. You don't need to deal with it now. I don't care about if you respond to me. And I freely admit, right, I probably respond to far fewer emails than I used to, but that, you know, so what, right? People are not kind of coming to me going, oh, I can never, Paul's never available, because they'll get hold of me another way.
By the way, I did the same thing as you. I did the exact same thing as you, because most times I would come back with a 3-digit number. Like, I'm gone for a couple of days and it's already like 3-digit number emails. And I'm like, nope. And you at least, I like your system a lot better. If I knew of the system, I would do it as well. I just archived everything because the search function in Outlook was good enough that if I really needed to find something, I would be able to. So I think the folder is better. So I would have done the folder if I had this problem still, which I don't, because now I just automatically archive 99% of emails.
I have a habit where I've kind of gone from being I used to be really meticulous about how I folded my emails, like I did it like on topic, and sometimes I do it based on who it came from, and now I still folder them but into much broader topics, so like sales, pre-sales, HR, payroll, right? Really big, broad areas. Travel. So that I know that I can kind of go through and look into a few things if I have to look for. Like, if I want to look for invoices from the booked flights, for example, I can go to my travel folder. But I do also just archive a bunch of stuff. Like, a bunch of notifications, just archive it. Like, again, you don't need to have it. I have a perennial thing with my personal inbox of like, if the little red number on my phone gets above like 200, I start to get jitters.
Oh, do you track on your phone? Do you have the notification thing on?
Personal one, I need to turn it off. But the problem is, again, what I need to do, what I have to another thing, is every like 2 months, I go into my like Gmail, I delete a bunch of stuff, and I'm like, unsub, unsub, yeah, unsub. I don't subscribe to this. Unsub, 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 unsub. And I don't know. It's just like having access to that amount of. I think the kind of, I don't have it that on my work. No way. Like, don't have notifications on, nothing on. It's really. I probably should turn it off really for my personal one as well. But I think it's this same thing of this information, of access to just the sheer amount of information that you can gain access to. You go, I will take up all these bits of information, and then you kind of find yourself going, this is too much information. I don't want this much information. And I think the really hard thing to do is strike a balance between that. And you kind of have to get back to a point of going, you know, if I wasn't on this email, I wouldn't know about it. And so what? So what if I wasn't on this email?
Yep.
Would it matter? No. Okay, fine. Doesn't matter.
By the way, just literally as we're speaking, I just proved to myself how awful email is. Because what I wanted to do is open up my work mail at the moment and check through like my folders, which I'm using Gmail, so it's practically tags, like labels. And I just saw that I got an email from my accountant and I immediately clicked on it. And as you were talking, I had a quick glance and I'm like, I wasn't listening to what Paul was saying. And this like goes to my point of like how awful email is and why like I hate this idea. Mm-hmm. I love that you're not putting notifications on. I love that you don't like, you know, have any pings or vibrates or whatever, because like this is how disruptive it is. I genuinely like, I'm so angry at myself right now because I never have email open, right? Email opens at like the two times that I have it like throughout the day, because otherwise this is literally what happens. But rant aside of my own inability to like pay attention, the way I have set it up on my like work email is that I have, similar to you, like very broad folders, very like, you know, for topics. So it is all about things that I want to make sure that I don't miss out, and I want to be able to click into them and have a view of them in the sense of like, oh, what was the last like 10 emails about? Like what was the topics that we were discussing? So I have something, so I have one of my labels is accounting. So that's obviously where all the emails from my accountant go. Continual improvements, that's all my logins for the different like courses and studies and everything else I'm doing when it comes to like continuing enabling myself to be better at my business. I have a customers folder. So that's where all of like the actual customer emails come in for folks that I'm talking to about potential workshops. I am using, and I do want to ask you about this sort of like what are tools and different things that you're using within email to help you navigate it better. So I have an add-on for Gmail that is helping you keep track of different business engagements. So things like, you know, ooh, are they interested in the course? How far in the conversation are we? Have I sent out like a business case? Have I sent out pricing? Have I sent out this? So it's practically like a little CRM tool within Gmail, which is really useful, and I'm quite liking it so far. I think I'll go through a lot more details if I continue using it. I have an FYI, which is literally for, hey, this thing happened, might be, you know, worth looking into, and I don't want it to be in archives, because in archives I will never remember to look for it. Other work is about non-workshop related stuff. So like DemoFest, for example, would go in there. So even though it's not paid work per se, it's still like something that I need to take really seriously and have other things associated with that. I have partners. So obviously I work with quite a lot of partners. I have Winning Skills, for example. I have Demo Boost in there. So every communication with, you know, the folks at Demo Boost, there will be like all of the emails will be there just so I can keep track of like what I've been up to with them. And then the most important part, really, the most important folder is receipts. Because obviously then I'll have to actually give this to my accountant to give to HMRC to make sure that they don't get into trouble for different bits and pieces. So yeah.
Yeah.
That and this works for me, right? This so far has been the most, I don't want to open my personal email because I did for the sake of like doing the same exercise, but then I saw the number of mail, like of emails that are in there, and I just closed it. Because I don't want to know.
I just turned off the badge on my personal email on my phone.
I am so happy you did that. I'm so happy you did that. I don't, again, nothing pings, nothing notifies me on my phone. My phone, mind you, especially after, so I was away for a couple of days in like districts in the UK. Whilst I was there, I made a very conscious decision to lock my phone down even more. So I have removed LinkedIn from my phone. I have Gmail on. And I have like obviously like the calendar as well. That's my calendar is the only thing that notifies me of anything, really.
Yeah.
Calendar is always allowed just to remind me what is the next thing I need to be doing, because that's something I only can curate. That is, my calendar is one of the few things that I have full curation about, and it's the only notifications that I want to allow. I don't miss not having notifications from my email, because what's the worst that can happen? Mm-hmm. And it's this feeling of FOMO that, you know, A World Without Email talks about, a lot of books talk about, which is, that's why we keep on checking email. That's why we keep on getting into that. Like, oh, but what happens if I miss something important? If it's important enough, somebody's going to call you, right? And I got really into that mentality over COVID, right? Like, if something is really, really important, because like, I don't watch the news either. I don't keep track of what's happening in the world. Maybe to my detriment, people may have very strong opinions on this topic. I also have a strong opinion, which is my life quality has increased tenfold thanks to that. And I'm getting more and more radical in the sense of having fewer and fewer engagement from the outside world unless I say so, unless I decide to do so.
Mm. I wanted to show you
this. What is this?
Which is my illustrated copy of Wordsworth's Guide to the Lakes, which I brought when I was last in the Lake District.
That looks beautiful.
Which was 4 years ago. Well, February 2020. Because I love the Lake District. It is beautiful. So, obviously being a literature person, William Wordsworth, very, very famous poet. He wrote... This is the illustrated version. The book's actually out of print, but... you can visit like his house. We went to his house where he wrote, and it really fits for me as someone who is like kind of plugged into that whole world. The Lake District is incredible, but it's funny because it's one of those places where, and it's like where I live, where you have Lake Windermere, which is in very, very the most famous lake where all the tourists go, and it's hyper touristy. And then there's like a lake which is like 5 miles up the road, no one goes to, because no one knows it's there. And it's this real contrast of like really super busy, lots and lots of tourists going there, and absolutely nobody. It has these like really, the Lake District has the sort of the quaint Englishness that I feel like people not from England imagine England to be like, and that's the Lake District.
A lot of it was really that like quintessential Britishness,
yeah,
that I equated.
Yes, yes. But I think the thing with email is, it's like everything, and whenever we talk about systems, when we talk about productivity, it comes back down to what works for you.
Nice. Maybe writing a newsletter.
That is something I am trying to finish.
I haven't either, so
I have one in progress. Here's the thing about productivity, right? And I actually touch on this in the newsletter, as a follow-up, is I have a tendency, and this is true with email as well, to massively overcomplicate and over-engineer the systems for doing something. The way I was doing it with the newsletter was I was using a piece of software that I've used for about over 10 years called Scrivener, which is a great piece of technology. Allows you to like store your notes, has a virtual chalkboard, but it is designed for like writing 100,000 word manuscripts. It is not designed for doing like blog entries essentially, or like 2,000 word newsletters. And what I was finding was I was spending more time trying to get my Scrivener to sync between two different laptops and then working it, and kind of it's the kind of equivalent of like getting all my like desk all perfectly set up all nicely. And what I did like a week ago, I just sat down, opened my Mac and opened Google Docs and started writing.
I'll give you an even better idea. Write.
Yeah.
Because you're using the same thing as me. Substack. Write in Substack itself. Where you're going to be posting,
yes,
it, write everything there. I take notes there. Right, so I...
Okay,
so instead... By the way, and this is taken again from... This is an inspiration from Cal Newport, like the guy who wrote like A World Without Email.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
He sort of like offhandedly said that as a... Oh yeah, if you're writing stuff like this, just take the notes in the file that you're going to then be the final work. Because why not? Like, why does it need to be somewhere else? It's like,
yes.
Ah! Actually, that's quite
true.
Smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I think I feel, again, I'm sort of trying to simplify down my system as much as possible. And in using Obsidian as well, I'm still using it, maybe not as heavily as when I first started using it. I've not tried to like build out data views and stuff. I still use hashtags, I still link notes, and that is where it's being super helpful. Mm-hmm. Just being quite simple about it. I would say that the thing I end on with email, right, we just mentioned newsletters. I think email newsletters are a really great thing. And I think like actual websites, actual like good quality email can be a really great way of imparting information, because what you're not, from an audience perspective, and this is where I go, I still miss Google Reader, because I do still miss Google Reader. What was great about Google Reader was it allowed me to bring together all my RSS feeds, all my blogs into one thing, and I could go read, 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 and then I would see it all in one place, and it was lovely. And now, decentralized, like I have some things that are, some people posting articles on LinkedIn, some people posting stuff on their own sites, it's all over the shop. Substack's great because it kind of comes in and says, hey, look, we can now have information in one place and all these things you can follow, and that's really cool. But I'm like, you know, you still have Medium, you still have, some people have a Medium, some people have a Substack, some people use Ghost. Email, I can get all of those newsletters to my email inbox, and that's a really great place to read them. And I am working really hard to just try and, again, kind of cultivate, in the same way that I cultivate what I listen to, what I watch, what I read, and what comes into that inbox, because it's, as you said earlier, like, that's people looking for your attention. And when people demand your attention, you need to decide how much of your attention you're going to give them and go, you know what, if this isn't relevant, I'm not interested, chuck it out. But I think that we need to, as with everything, and we kind of come back to the same theme over and again across this entire show, it's almost like we find that there's continuity between technology, which is the thing. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, there is an awful lot of trash, and whether that is AI generated trash, whether that is just like clickbaity trash that's been generated by a click farm, whether it's just someone like reposting the same content, whatever, right? I'm in rant mode here, but there is still some really good stuff. And I think as well, just focusing on like just taking little bits, little information, like email can be really great. It can be a really great way of imparting big bits of information. And the final thing I'll say, actually, that I've noticed a few of my executive team do, which is really helpful, is they will say at the top of an email that's important, this is a long email, please take time to read it. And that means is that rather than me trying to sit and like skim it and race through all the information, I go, okay, let's open this email up, let's get a coffee, whatever, and let's sit and digest this. Let's, if you have an iPad, get your iPad, read it. Don't try and read it on a computer screen. Read it on your iPad, read it on your, you know, maybe even on your phone, something that's a bit more like, if you need to digest that information. And again, don't over-engineer what you're doing, but just find a different way to digest that information. And the final thing, again, final thing, start communicating in a way that you want people to communicate with you, because they will mirror what you do. If you don't want to get one-line emails, don't send them.
I have one last thing to say about the whole email thing and newsletter thing and all that, which is really love for RSS to get a renaissance, a RSS renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because better than me trying to say lawn mower. Oh fuck! Lawn mower. Why do I need to say it? Such an American accent? I don't understand.
I don't know.
But the reason I like RSS, the same reason I like podcasts, and the same way actually I approach YouTube, and the same way I wish I could approach email, but it's not a fairy tale world where it works like that. I pick which RSS feeds to follow. I pick which YouTube channels to subscribe to. I pick which, you know, which podcasts to listen to. The only thing that's off still is that email side of things. But I do wish more people would do more RSS stuff. It's one of the reasons, by the way, where I'm like far more... I think since we started having this conversation, I've completely stopped posting on LinkedIn, which is maybe a bad thing. I think I'm going to, you know, sort of fix that. Yeah, I haven't posted in like 2 weeks. you haven't noticed.
So what?
See, this is what I mean. Like,
I have. No, but I have. But I haven't. I have been very sporadic in my posting. And I think some of that has just been because I've just had other stuff going on. And I've been like, my brain has been occupied in that way. And I've needed to just like take a bit of a down. I've disinvested myself in that platform in quite a lot of ways, which is like, again, this is a journey.
Was the badge the reason? Was that?
It wasn't the badge. I just don't know. I'm kind of going, I was finding myself going on there and not really engaging with the content.
Yeah.
And I think I was like, if I'm not engaging with this content, then why there's nothing motivated me to put stuff out there. And I think it was for a time it was about, hey, grow and gain followers and stuff. And I've kind of moved beyond that now. And I'm like, I need to just be doing stuff that I enjoy. But I've also just been having a bit of a, is this really like, am I really invested in what I'm saying? Or am I just posting
stuff? Just saying
stuff
for the sake of stuff.
Sake of saying it. And that's where I'm kind of at. Yep.
Can we do a bit of follow-up?
Yeah.
It's been a month since officially I've been by my own.
Mm.
A whole month. I don't know if it requires applause. No, it feels more of a car crash and the happening. No, I'm being harsh with myself. I have achieved in this 1 month. So again, just for like, you know, folks that haven't, you know, been following throughout the entire all the episodes. So the company that I've been running since, so the company started in July, but really it was the start of March is when I was made redundant, right? So really the beginning of March was the first point of I'm now completely by myself and I have the time and the space to actually work on the business. So genuinely, like, that's where I'm officially setting up as the you know, day zero. Day zero is the beginning of March. So it's been a full month and it feels like I have taken at least 6 U-turns of what is it that I want to do. And I feel like not a lot of folks talk about this often enough, especially when you have, when you're trying to achieve and you're trying to do something that's a little bit, when there is no prescripted path, you take a lot of U-turns along the way of like, ooh, this maybe is not the best of ideas, let me do something else. Or, ooh, maybe this is not the thing, let me do something else. My biggest U-turn really was, and you know, in a month's time, maybe we'll have this conversation again, was the fact that I need to stop trying to be someone else in the sense of, so it's turning out that what Don Carmichael, friend of the show, did for me with, and I'll be forever grateful to him about this, with handing over the workshops. I felt that now I need to be a Don Carmichael, right? I need to be a person that has pre-sales workshops, which was not the reason people came to me in the first place. And it took a lot of conversations with different mentors that I have through the pre-sales enablement space for me to sort of get to this conclusion that that's not really what the value I bring here is. And I really want to share with folks something that Natasha Bax of Great Demo Fame, she really got this idea into my head. And I think it also will resonate with folks that are not only just business owners, but also individual contributors, because it was something that I was genuinely missing, which is, what do people know you about? Which is really important in the in the company as well. Incredibly much so when you have your own business. And then what is the thing, what is actual value to provide, and what are the other things you can do? So the problem I discovered that I have is that I want to do a million and one things at the same time, and I only have a limited span of time. So how do you, and then how do you position this to folks? Which is the most difficult part. What is the value to put out there? And the messaging was incredibly convoluted until now. Because like, oh, I can do this and I can do that and I can do, you know, this a billion other things. Natasha really pushed back on me and said, like, what is the thing that people know you about? What is the reason people come to you? It's not pre-sales enablement, is it? That's not what people know you about. They know you for your whiteboarding. They know you because you, the way you present, the way you engage with people, the way you actually get people thinking and feeling. So the way she described it, and I even have it, folks, obviously, and you can't see it either, but I have it painted on my, like, on the whiteboard that I have right next to me. It's a little shop. So imagine like a high street shop. As you walk by, what do you see on the window? My window should have been this entire time, but I'm fixing it now, is whiteboarding, right? That is the thing that pulls people in. That is the reason people, you know, reach out to me and go like, ooh, can you talk to my team? Because I love what you're doing. I love how you're expressing yourself. I love how you're doing all the, you know, when you and I talk about my presentations at DemoFest, it's always about like, you know, you illustrate it, right? You draw it out. Like, people talk about, like, you get people feeling, right? So why was I hiding that away? I don't know, because I wanted to feel like I was a real pre-sales enablement person. Right? And I sort of got lost in that, in you know, which, by the way, echoes incredibly much so my journey as a SE, because I did the exact same thing. It was like, oh, all of these amazing people that do this fantastic work, I want to be like them. Oh crap, it doesn't work. Let me go back to being myself. But it's the exact same journey, right? Absolutely same journey. So talking about that high street shop, you have the window still to the very front that says, you know, in my case, it's whiteboarding. In the shop, when people walk in, that is where on the shelves I put workshops. I put, you know, public speaker. I put all of the other bits and pieces of value that I can give people. And then, so now you get, again, you get the front of the shop, you get the actual shop itself. And then in the back, in the warehouse, you have other bits and pieces like consulting and like other, like, you know, content creation, all of these other bits and pieces that I like doing, which are not really the core business. But if somebody asks, like, yeah, like somebody can pop in the back and have a look if they, you know, if we have anything in stock. And that visualization was so critical for me to get my brain through this really difficult patch that I was having of like, what the heck am I doing?
There's kind of been a, and folks again listening from the start know that at the start of the year I was promoted into a leadership role, and it's been going really well. And it's funny because I described this to my colleague as well. I said, basically, I just got to the point where I felt like things were not like settling down is the wrong word, but like I was getting into a rhythm, and then it's like something happened, and I feel like it's the universe kind of coming along and poking me and going, by the way, don't ever get too comfortable where you are, because there's always going to be something that's going to change. And I should be honest, right? Like, again, basically, it's not a, it's not like a kind of really sort of negative. It's just one of those things where we're going, oh, okay, that was unexpected. And it's left me kind of going, huh, okay, what I wanted to do, what I thought I wanted to do, much like you, is now, has now changed. I'm no longer doing what I thought I wanted, or it's not that I'm no longer doing what, it's my timeline for when I thought things were going to happen has changed. And I've gone, oh, right, okay. Let's now see how this sort of timeline plays out, right? This is a different timeline, and there's that timeline, and things may have gone a different way, and oh right, maybe it did, but the point is it hasn't, and things are, I'm now on this path. And I think that where I'm sort of landing a bit like you is I'm trying to like not get too caught up in defining, you know, all these things I can do. I can do this and do this and do this and do this. But at the same time, there's a video I saw the other day that really kind of struck me quite, you know, in a way that I was like, okay, like, dude, don't call me out in this way. But basically said, I can't know the exact wording, but essentially it was, don't be critical of too critical of yourself. There's a lot of people who are jealous of where you are right now, including yourself 2 years ago. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I had a conversation with my other half, and she was like, I'm jealous of where you are and your success. And I was like, oh. And I was like, she was like, no, because you've been very successful. And I can just, like, I want to crawl up into a little ball as I'm saying this, because I hate talking about myself like this. And you call me out for this, and other people do. But I will never not be very, not self-critical, but I will always, I would say never knowingly, knowingly undersold.
Yep.
Maybe is how I would describe myself. But it's this thing of going, oh, right, actually, let's just now take let's go this way. And I think what I'm just trying to do, and this is true of anybody, whether you're an IC, whether you're in leadership, whatever kind of path you're on, and just I'm trying to practice what I preach, which is to roll with it. And do you know something, Lydia? It's really easy to tell people to roll with it. It's a lot harder when you're actually going, oh, I now need to just sort of take it and go, oh, okay. Breathe. Like, don't get too caught up in my own head, and let's go and see.
And just do the thing. Yep.
Yeah, just do the thing. Just do it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an update. So the thing is, it's going well for both of us, but also not in the way that we expected, which I'm sure if you'd asked us both 3 months ago, we'd have gone, no, we definitely know how things are going to go, and we definitely know what we're going to do in 3 months' time. And of course,
My biggest challenge at the moment, to be honest with you, is the whole, again, to the point of like, yeah, you know, it's so easy to like tell other people and then to actually follow through with yourself. Because I've said this on recording before, which is like, I have enough savings to get me going for the next 2.5 years. So why I shouldn't be, the idea is I shouldn't be worried about cash flow. Because like, again, full transparency, there is none at the moment. Like, there's zero. Like, in the month of March, I have made, not zero, but I've made very little money. Not sustainable amount of money. But that was the plan. That was literally the plan. Yet when, as that month now is rolling by, and now I'm coming into the first month where I will officially have no salary coming into my bank account, I'm like, I'm and I shouldn't, because this is the plan. This is literally how I planned it to be. Like, the whole point was not to focus on making money. But yeah, reality is different. But I just wanted to like use this a little bit of an update, you know, beginning of the month. Like, this is how, where things are. Things are changing, and I think not being, I'm a big believer in the whole, like, you know, you shouldn't let see the sunk cost fallacy like get to you. Because just because I've been doing something for a long while doesn't mean it's actually good. And I'm really trying to avoid that with almost everything I'm doing here, because if I'm not agile, if I don't change things, if I don't really reflect on what's working or and or that get lost in the noise, it will be really, really hard to actually get out of it. But yeah.
It's hard, and I think the things that we didn't have 3 months ago was perhaps this kind of clarity about what's coming next. And I think for you, it's as you say, we're clearly in very different positions, but in some ways we're also kind of quite similar. And there is that sort of like moment where you go, oh right, okay, this is it now. And I feel like I had that maybe a month ago, where I just had to make some decisions that I was like, oh, this feels like very big decisions I have to make. And I feel like for you, you're now in a position of going, all right, okay, now this is real. I now have to, well, not saying you have to make this work, but this is now like you've sort of been, you've kind of had enough time to figure out what it is that you want to do, or at least what it is that you want to do next. And I think that's where I'm trying to look at that, is it's not, this isn't a case of what I want to do like forever. It's what do I want to do next? And it's an interesting conversation I had recently with all my team when I was doing their enablement plans, because there's a question around it, which is like, what do you want to be doing in the next 2 years? And when I first read the question, I read it as, what do you want to be doing in 2 years' time? And that isn't the question. The question is, what do you want to spend the next 2 years doing? Which is a very different question. Sounds very similar, but it's very different. And I would say people always talk about, where do you want to be in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Who knows? But a much more tangible question is, what do you want to be doing for the next 2 years, the next year, the next 6 months, the next 3 months? What do you want to be focused on, and what's the outcome going to be of that? Let's update in 3 months' time. I'm enjoying the whole music.